Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. And it is a credit union, which means, unlike most banks, it belongs to you. For more information, go to www.mecu.com. Or you can log on to steinershow.org and click on their banner, their MeQ banner, which is at the top of our page. We are going to have a conversation with folks from the Open Society Institute, at least some of their new fellows. We'll talk about that program every 18 months, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. A new batch of fellows comes in who have these exciting creative projects they are doing in the city of Baltimore to change the lives of people, the nature of our city. Every time they elect some OSI fellows, we bring them on the air to talk about their work, but also kind of envision what kind of city we could really have. We want you to envision with us at 410-319-8888. We have in our studio right now Latasha Vanzi, who is creator of Evoku.
Correct.
All right. Yeah. Evoku, Actualized Global Leadership Experience, EGLE, a project to offer leadership and career development opportunities to underserved youth in our communities. Latasha, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Maya Kosick is with us. Maya is a founder of the Baltimore Urban Farmers Alliance, and we do a lot of shows on this program, a lot of conversations on this program about urban farming and the future of agriculture. So it's a pleasure to have you in the studio, Maya. Welcome.
Thank you.
Andrew Gaddis is with us. He's co-founder of Charm City Clinic, a free community-based health center in East Baltimore. Andrew, welcome.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
So let's talk about your projects. What are they first? Let's get that on the table, and then we can kind of go off in any direction we want. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And so, Latasha, talk to us about the work you're doing.
Oh, wonderful. Evoku Actualized Global Leadership Experience is an awesome youth leadership development organization that takes our young people of Baltimore City on a journey of social entrepreneurship, community service giving, career mentorship, which culminates into annual travel outside of the country. So what we are doing is showing our young people how to be leaders now. The future is not later. The future is now. And we want to ensure that our young people are highly adaptive civic citizens for the world, because as we know, with our current economy, that's most likely going to be the only choice.
We'll explore that idea in a moment, too. Maya?
So I am working with a group of urban farmers throughout the city and working with them together to build a network or an alliance, potentially a cooperative, basically a group where we can share resources. So that will mean hopefully sharing some equipment, sharing some marketing and branding, and basically doing everything we can to collaborate to really make urban farming more profitable, more productive, and a better resource for our city.
And we'll explore all these things in a little greater depth. And Andrew Gaddis, tell us about what you're up to.
So I'm here representing Charm City Clinic, which is a free clinic and health resource center located in Middle East Baltimore, which is a community that, despite being just blocks from Johns Hopkins Hospital, suffers from extremely poor outcomes due to preventable disease. And we function to first provide health screenings for hypertension, diabetes, and other conditions. And more importantly, we function to map existing resources that our clients are eligible for, connect them to them, and then ensure access by following up with them.
So this is all very interesting, and I want to explore it kind of a little bit more about each one of these programs. What you were just saying, Andrew Gaddis, about being on the east side of the Mideast, which was a community that was probably the most affected by the redevelopment of the east side, which is still an ongoing controversy in this town. What you just said about not having adequate medical care for people living right next to Johns Hopkins Hospital is probably something of a little what? To some people. Not to everybody listening, but to some people it's what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might come as a surprise to some people, but unfortunately proximity to medical centers, even though Baltimore, you know, has a bunch of great medical centers providing extremely high quality of care, is not really a factor in the care that people receive. What happens is that because most of the clients that we see are extremely low income, they're forced to navigate this confusing mess of resources that are available to them, which is not straightforward at all. And successful navigation of this usually will result in high quality care. And there's a bunch of programs that are available, but there's no kind of centralized directory that allows them to kind of access these resources. And that's what our case managers serve to do, is really just keep an active awareness of these resources and then educate our clients about these resources and help them through their journey to access.
So you don't have physicians and nurses are not at your clinic, or are they at your clinic?
So we do have board-certified physicians, and they function mainly just for health screenings. So just on the principle that we want to be stratifying risks. So if someone's suffering from a hypertensive emergency or urgency, we don't want to be talking with them about health insurance that'll kick in 40 days down the line. We want to be focused on providing them, you know, more urgent resources that they can access that week or maybe even that day.
So, and I want to hear a little bit more about this, about Latasha, what you're doing. About what is it that you mean by want to prepare people for entrepreneurship? I hear that a lot, but what does it really mean? I mean, only because most people who start businesses, everybody wants to have their own business. I mean, it has this fantasy or dream to have their own business, but that it often takes years of working through other people's businesses and in the world to even figure out how you can do one.
Exactly. And that is exactly what Eagle is. Eagle is essentially a idea incubator for our young people. And we believe in starting with them early on when their passions and their interests are ripe. And so what we do through our training, during which our young people meet on a monthly basis, they learn about what leadership is, especially servant leadership, and we put it into action immediately. Our seminars are not just lecture-driven. Immediately after the seminars, they are going right into the community, surveying them, understanding how to do a market survey to understand what the need is, and then they respond to the need with a business idea or a social entrepreneurship idea, which could be a community service project. In doing that, they also learn how to do business planning, actually planning for business sustainability. So they're learning how to write grants if it's a community service organization that they're planning. They're learning how to do feasibility studies to see if the business idea that they have will be something that actually can work. They're learning how to build capacity amongst potential investors. How do they do that? Well, and why are they compelled to do that? They have to raise money for their trips each year. So they are highly compelled to actually do the actual work that is traditionally expected of grad students or even startup businesses to do. And so
who are these kids?
These kids are children who are from the four corners of Baltimore. We are actually outreaching to young people throughout Baltimore, those who are primarily socioeconomically disadvantaged. We are actually working on a special project with young people rising out of homelessness through AIRS City Steps, which is one of our primary partners. They are coming from convergent schools in Baltimore City. And so we are specifically targeting those young people who are marginalized, those who might be overlooked, the quiet ones in the classroom, who may be the average students, or the student that might be the one that is traditionally not focused in the classroom management issue. Those are the students we want, because we know those are the ones that are eager and ready to get in and do something that is productive. They want to see the evidence of the theories. And Eagle is the organization that tests those theories.
Did you start this thing?
I did.
You did start this thing.
Yes, along with a supportive group of board members and my husband, who is serving in Afghanistan right now.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes.
In what service?
He's actually in the Navy. He's embedded with the Army, and he's on a great project to help transition our forces out of there.
Very interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And so that urban farming is something that gets a lot of – we hear a lot about it, and there are a number of people who do that. But so I'm trying to say exactly what it is you're trying to do. I mean, this is – how many of these urban farms are you talking about in our community, and what exactly do you think you can accomplish?
Sure. So a little bit just sort of about where I come at this from. I spent a little over a year working at Real Food Farm, which is one of the largest urban farms in Baltimore, located right in Clifton Park. And through that, got to know a lot of people working on the policy level, people working at other urban farms, and seeing a lot of the barriers and limitations. If you're an individual and you want to start, like Tasha's talking about, an entrepreneurial farm, some of the barriers that exist, or if you're a small community and you really want to start a production-oriented farm, so sort of slightly different than your average community garden where you're really trying to be a productive food source for either your community or for a farmer's market. some of the barriers that prevent people from being as productive or as successful as they could be. So they're a group of farms. Depending on how you count it, we've got about 8 to 10 production-oriented farms in Baltimore City right now. These folks are talking about not being able to access equipment or wanting to sell food in restaurants or to their neighbors and lacking some of the tools they need to do that. And so seeing that we're all sort of competing for similar resources, competing for the same grants, and realizing that we can try to pull together and do this more cooperatively to make things go further.
So let me ask you through this question. And mm-hmm. folks, I'm going to ask all of you out there this question who are listening right now at the Mark Steiner Show here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, 410-319-8888. We have three Open Set Institute new fellows with us, the interesting projects to try to transform parts of Baltimore. And I want us to kind of imagine what Baltimore could be. You know, we have these elections, we elect these people, and it often seems we elect people, and then nothing seems to be what could be. It just remains the same. That you've heard their ideas, and I'm curious what you think Baltimore could become. How would to transform this city in some fundamental, profound ways from your perspectives? I mean, it's there are a lot of interesting ideas here that we have, but we don't let ourselves envision what this town could actually be. How do you think you could transform this town if you had your projects and you had more of the levers of power to really push things? How could the city be transformed, do you think?
Well, that's right at the root of what we're working on with the urban farmers. I mean, driving around, there's vacant land all over Baltimore. A lot of city planners are starting to shift the vision rather than saying, oh, we need to keep growing, keep growing, keep growing. I mean, a lot of people would like to see more growth in our city, but the reality is we're half the size we once were. And to really embrace that and embrace our open space and say that we can really use this to be productive, to generate something we're all already spending money on. We're not selling a new product. We're selling food. And if some of those food dollars can stay in our city, it could really make a tremendous difference.
Some of the things we talk about when we talk about food is how to get the food to the people that's grown. In other words, a lot of people who are urban farmers, mm-hmm. and this is no aspersion on them because people are making a living.
Right.
But they grow food and they sell it to fancy restaurants.
Yeah.
That's how they make the living. Mm-hmm. The question is, how does Baltimore grow food?
Yeah.
And give it to the people who need it, who are the people who live in communities, which you've seen the map that's been put out about food deserts, entire stretches of Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
There's no supermarket mm-hmm. near them. So how does that – I mean, that to me is the key to it all, not just
absolutely.
The ability to sell to great restaurants like Woodbury Kitchen and the Dogwood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Which are great customers.
Great place to eat.
And I think that there's a lot to be said in having a balance of selling – some to high-end customers so that the farm can make ends meet and actually still be around the next growing season while selling affordable produce in their neighborhood. So some of the ways that could happen is to have a shared machine that can handle EBT, formerly food stamp EBT cards, that can handle debit, credit, and EBT so that any farm could set up a farm stand in their neighborhood without buying this expensive piece of equipment and still be able to accept in a lot of food deserts, a huge method of paying is through food stamps. And so
and farmers markets, by and large, don't take food stamps.
Right. There are very few that do. So something that a number of us are in conversation about is by next season getting a shared EBT machine that then could be shared amongst multiple farms, and they could actually do a farm stand in their neighborhood and be able to increase access directly where they're growing the food. Because otherwise, if we don't pull together and share some of these resources, every farmer is going to be selling exclusively to high-end restaurants. And that's not what will really build our city.
Right. Urban farmers selling healthy food to rich people is not the answer to the problems of Baltimore.
That's nothing unique or particularly new. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, anybody can do that.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, it can be part of the solution, but it's not the solution.
I think another big deal here is not only, making these kind of healthy foods available to people, but also fighting this common misconception among low-income people that it is not cost-effective to eat healthy. You know, so beyond making it available, you have to kind of let them know how to cook it. And we've been trying to make an effort to do that at the clinic. We've got two Albert Schweitzer fellows, Kirsten Meyer and Mark Evans, and they're doing a spectacular job with these block parties where we'll try to kind of bring people in the community together under certain themes dealing with healthy living. And one of them is definitely food, because I think, you know, a lot of the outcomes that we're seeing due to hypertension and diabetes could be easily avoided if people could, you know, access and utilize this healthy food.
And you talk about the Albert Schweitzer fellows. Before you jump in, Tasha, then we go right to the phones and come back to your two ideas as well. Is the Albert Schweitzer fellows, who are graduate students in medicine, law, social work, nursing at the University of Maryland. Mm-hmm. And they really did, and also Hopkins. I mean, they're from all over.
I think from all over Baltimore, yes.
From all over Baltimore.
Okay. And I would just like to add that EGO is an organization that helps young people in particular how to gain access to that network of opportunity. There is no success unless you understand how to access that network, how to wield it to make sure you get access to jobs, to access to financing, access to support. Evidence of that in our organization, which we piloted last year, was that we work with a group of 10 young people, five of which worked diligently to, for the first time, learn how to network and to reach out to the philanthropy network to fund their trip. They were the only young people on this trip with EF Towards, which traditionally caters to young people in affluent communities, to raise all of the money on their own through diversifying their revenue streams. They outreached to philanthropists directly. They sold, they developed their own store and sold products. And in addition to that, they sold other products like jewelry, candy. They started stores in their own school. And so one of the things EGO is would like to do is to make sure that we develop youth leaders in strategic locations throughout the city who can then take the message of imagining big, thinking big, and doing it bigger, which is our mantra. We are actually showing young people what is that process to make manifest your hopes and dreams, and how do you sustain it? And so evidence of that is two young men that we were working with last year are actually launching their initiatives. One just partnered with the Ronald McDonald House, and he's doing a donation drive on an annual basis, and which hopefully will culminate into a nonprofit organization working with young people. So see, he can access more young people than I can. Mm-hmm. Another has developed a landscaping business, a yard services business, and he's already prepared to hire other young people to work in that business. And so we know that the strategies that we're using that are traditionally taught to businesses and business startups can work with the young people right now. It's a paradigm shift. And I think if schools will adopt this or private people and communities will adopt this and replicate this, Baltimore will become the hub it's always been meant to be.
So, folks, your ideas and thoughts about transforming this community we're in with three people who are new OSI fellows, Open Society Institute fellows, who are dreaming that same thing, working at it, not just dreaming it, working at it. And your thoughts about what you think we could do in this town. What could change the city? What would you like to see change? And just envision it, just like we had somebody on the show, a young professor at Morgan here, State University, who thought you should unearth the rivers in Baltimore and turn it into a town that it was a delta town. And he wants to start with Central Avenue. The Morgan students in architecture designed the entire system that would go from the northeast side of Baltimore, all the way down through the east side, all the way down through Fells Point and into the harbor to create almost like a Venice. And where do you put your money? Where do you change things? Put people to work, create new ideas, your thoughts. 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Clarence. Welcome.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, we can.
I have the same mindset. I think big. And just an example of the idea that I've been very adamant about as a model for not only the city but for the nation as a whole. When you look at the old Memorial Stadium, what I saw there was a miniature city within itself where all of those seats in that stadium represented a tomato plant to me. And I envisioned seniors living in it, being retrofitted with seniors living in that facility with shops and everything else centrally located there. When you look at how we build these massive stadiums to play football games in, and we can use that same footprint that a football stadium uses and set it somewhere and think about technology and building up in that same structural matter and making it year-round where even people in the community could own a certain section and sell the product right there. If anybody could, you know, elaborate on that further or take that and run with it, you know, I'd like to hear it. Thank you.
Yeah. So just in terms of, you know, utilizing existing infrastructure, I think that's, you know, real important. So to give you a background, you know, we're based out of the Meta Family Center, which is a community center that's been serving our community for about 15 years. And just functioning to kind of connect these resources that are already there. I think there's a lot going on that could really kind of improve Baltimore. And Maya's project's very similar, you know, and it's a matter of just making sure that these resources are all communicating and talking to each other. They're easily to, you know, easily accessible and making sure that people are actually connecting with them and utilizing them to their full potential before kind of bringing new things in.
I mean, what he was talking about, I mean, there is a vision in this town where you could actually have hoop houses that could grow food all year round. All year round.
It's happening. It's happening in Clifton Park, and it's happening over in Boone Street, and it's happening down by the harbor, and it's happening all over the city.
So that would be a place to kind of put some investment dollars in this community.
Definitely.
That aren't just new hotels.
Yeah.
I mean, hotels are nice. Mm-hmm. But 410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts, Baltimore, what do you do with it? How do you turn it around? Take your thoughts just out of just the elections and into what you think this community could be. Tian, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, I think it's spectacular, the EGO program that was being discussed earlier, systematically showing young people that they're capable of doing things that are productive and positive. I have started a business that is along similar lines of tutoring young people and actually making a system out of the individual learning styles that young people have and showing them, like, one step at a time that they're capable of doing things that they once thought that they were never capable of doing. And I would be very happy to, you know, network with all of the institutions being represented here, and I strive to network with other institutions around the city to do what we were talking about earlier as far as you know, making sure that we're maximizing all of our currently existing programs before coming up with something that's sort of redundant. And another idea that I had in terms of making Baltimore productive and no longer ignoring some of the people in the society who have been sort of swept to the side, maybe creating a organization that utilizes free open source software to create systems for whether they be local or state or even federal agencies where these skills at using and configuring some of this free open source software and even negotiating some of the terms of the free open source software could be taught to some of our local residents. Those skills could be taught because, as we're finding in much of the industry, particularly in the IT field, many positions are no longer looking for degrees. They're actually looking for certifications. People who have the skills, and they're less more looking for bachelor's degrees and master's degrees. They're looking for, are you J2EE certified? Are you Microsoft? Are you Cisco certified? And in many cases, some of those certifications are becoming worth more than a degree.
Well, what you're saying, Tian, I wonder how many places in Baltimore are actually training people just for that. Just for that. I mean, we have this.
So I think that would be a new program that would actually that wouldn't be redundant, and that would definitely allow some of the socioeconomically disadvantaged people to tap into an industry that they probably never thought they could.
Tian, I appreciate the thought. I think that's a very powerful thought. I think that, you know, I've gotten critiqued for this from people on the air when I ask questions, but I think we overemphasize sometimes college. That everybody doesn't have to go to college to make a living. You have to go to training programs, like Tian's talking about, be certified in certain softwares, to become a plumber, to become an electrician. We're always going to need electricians. We're always going to need plumbers. We're going to need program software engineers. Those people are really necessary. You don't have to spend 4 years in a college to do that and can make a living.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons that Eagle is offering what we call Eagle's Healthy Bodies, Minds, and Souls events called it's called Eagle's Healthy Bodies, Minds, and Souls Career Expo each year. And each year, we would like to provide an opportunity for young men like Tian to really educate the community about what are the options out there. At our Career Expo and Job Fair, we are actually helping young people understand what are the trending opportunities out there, what are the industries, and what are the expectations to make sure that they're absolutely ready from the time they're 12 through age 24, if, you know, they haven't decided if they want to go to college yet. What else can we do? And so at our particular Career Expo and Job Fair, we have some organizations who are actually ready to train, to help make sure these young people get on the path to get certifications in both healthcare, IT, and I believe the other one is in trucking. So we need more of that, and I would like to invite Tian to contact me, maybe offline, to discuss how he can get involved in that.
Well, Tian, if you leave your email and telephone number, we will give it over to Latasha after the show and see if you two can hook up. Okay. Folks, the number here is 410-319-8888. Maureen, you're the next caller up. We have to take a brief break and come to your call. This is one of the brightest audiences in Baltimore City, and in Maryland. I want to hear your ideas about how we transform things. What do you do that's beyond the body politic with our three guests here, the OSI fellows, in the new 18-month program that just started? 410-319-8888. On the way there, talking about smart folks, I want to talk to WEAA members right now because it's that time of year for our annual WEAA members-only appreciation holiday party. It's Thursday, December the 1st. That's next week, isn't it?
This week.
Huh?
This week.
That's this week.
Yeah, Thursday.
Oh, it's this week. Thursday.
2 days away.
Thank you. I needed that. Thursday, December 1st, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Black Olive in Baltimore. Enjoy complimentary cuisine and special live broadcast performances featuring Marshall Booz and the MC Booz Band. You must be a current WEAA member to attend, and space is limited. So please call 443-885-2075, and the special event is brought to you by the Black Olive and Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Be there. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. And we are joined here in the studio by three of the new Open Society Institute Fellows. Every 18 months, OSI pays, I forget what it is, X amount of money to people that apply for these positions, where they can spend 18 months building up the project they're working on in the city of Baltimore, work with a group of other fellows to really share information and grow. And every time they have a new class, we end up having some members of that class on this program. Joining us here in the studio now are Latasha Vanzi, creator of Evoku Actualized Global Leadership Experience, known as EAGLE, a project to offer leadership and career development opportunities to underserved youth here in Baltimore City. Maya Kosak is founder of the Baltimore Urban Farmers Alliance, trying to figure out ways to bring grow agriculture in Baltimore, but actually make it possible for regular human beings who don't live in very wealthy neighborhoods eat this food.
Exactly.
And Andrew Gaddis is with us, who is co-founder of Charm City Clinic, a free community-based health center in East Baltimore and Mideast. helping people access the medical care system to get the care they need. And they're all joining us here. And we're talking now about kind of envisioning what Baltimore could be like. What are things that could – I mean, think way – I hate outside the box and that saying about I didn't know what else to say. But thinking beyond the pale about what you could do to change this city. We were talking during the break about guests who have had on the show before who were saying, you know, we don't train people for the jobs that exist. There are people on this program who years back who had a huge operation in the Port of Baltimore, and they can't find trained machinists who can make $20, $25, $30, $35 an hour working in the Port of Baltimore. We don't have people that are there. So what would you do? What are your ideas about that? I'm going to talk about some medical ideas, some other ideas on the course of the show. Maureen, I wish you were coming to your call and you just hung up. So call back and we'll get you back on. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Ray, here on campus, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah.
Hi, Ray. Welcome.
Thanks for your show, Mark. Can you hear me?
We can, man. We can.
Okay, great. Yeah, and you know, I was a little bit disappointed that I got through because you're asking for ideas, and you know, I hear a lot of ideas all the time, and I would love to for us to create some kind of repository of ideas where people can really examine them and look at them, you know, the best practice stuff, the stuff that's working. You know, for example, we have schools out there with some incredible programs that are getting excellent results that we just hear about the bad stuff.
Yeah.
There's Calvin Rodwell that has a elementary school with a culinary arts program that's teaching nutrition, science, and healthy eating that's going back to the homes, back to the parents from elementary school kids and changing family behavior. We have National Foundation for Teaching Entrepreneurship and all kinds of other different programs, things that are working that, you know, sometimes I struggle getting people to even go take a look at them. I think if we can somehow create some kind of repository for the great things that are going on, and you know, one person that I'm really proud of in terms of what she does, she tries to get a lot of stuff out there, and that's April Yvonne Garrett with Amplify Baltimore.
Yeah, April's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the more we get this stuff out there, the more people can see what's working. And these discussions, I think, will build up. There are a lot of things that are going on that people just don't know. So I'm looking for ideas on how we create a repository of best practices and show people what's working. So when they see it working, they'll want to do it.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the great things about the fellowship and the time that it gives us is that personally now I have the chance to really look at what other cities are doing, to not sit down and just reinvent the wheel. You know, sometimes when we're running our own programs, we're so busy running the program, we don't get to see what people have already figured out. And I've found that in previous jobs I've had. And so at this point, you know, we're barely even a month into our 18 months. And it's really, for me, it's really given me time to contact people in other cities across the country and see what people are doing, what ideas are already out there,
yes,
what things
right.
are proven to work, rather than trying to remake the same mistakes over it again.
We have a lot of people, a lot of ideas here, so let's get them on the phone.
Ray,
I'm sorry, man. Very quickly, because we have a lot of callers, but go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say just a couple of books that people should look at. The Necessary Revolution by Peter Sanjay. Bill Clinton's latest book, Back to Work. He's got some fantastic ideas in there. And That Used to Be Us by Thomas Friedman. Awesome, incredible. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on around the world that's just incredible that we need to get the word out. Thanks.
I'm glad you're listening, Ray. Thanks so much for your call. 410-319-8888 Clinton in Owings Mills, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing?
Well, welcome.
All of the ideas have definitely been good. And, you know, if you sit back and listen, if you've been listening to the show for the past, I don't know, 10 or 15, 20 minutes or however long, you can kind of see where everything is interconnecting, and I think one of the baseline things is reaching kids and reaching them so that when you present them with ideas, you get to see that spark. I'm sure for your guests out of there, if they've ever worked with kids, and it may not be all kids. I mean, everybody has a different interest, so it's a different thing that sparks, but when it does, you see it, and you can take it and run for it. And I think that repository is definitely a good idea. And a repository could simply be a networking site or such as one of the guests was talking about, having a central site available for like medical services and health practices. The same thing for whatever is going on, you know, in terms of services with schools, keeping parents connected. One of my friends, Mr. Baba Olumiji, he's running a summer program where he's taking young black men, and he's having like a carousel of different guests. So I'm kind of like a techie guy, so I talk to them. I catch them with video games. I mention video games, and I pull out an Xbox as part of my presentation, and they all light up. And from there, you grab them, and you get that idea, and you show them how they can do what they want to do for others, and maybe teaching or business or even planting or growing a garden and feeding people. But I really think it starts with the kids, because we definitely want to reach out to the parents. But while we're doing that, we can reach out to the kids too. And that business, it's a tried and true business model. Why do something again and again if it's not going to work? Provide resources and connecting so that, you know, if you're a business and you're looking for financing, if somebody says, hey, I know a bank down the street where you can talk to, and, you know, they're really gracious with lending, you're going to go to them. It's the same thing with finding the right resources and connecting in terms of whatever community type of program we're trying to do. If we can get that in a simple, even starting at a simple website, have it categorized and have people be able to post their experiences or something like that in their comments, their pluses, their pros, cons, whatever their story is, so that someone can get straight to the source instead of hitting the obstacle. Because if you're dealing with government, no matter what, and it may not just, and it's not necessarily a knock, you're going to come against some obstacles.
Clinton, I appreciate the great idea. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to jump in and comment, they can. I was thinking that before we go to our next couple of callers here, thinking about like on the health field, you know, I was there a long time ago when we created the People's Free Medical Clinic, which still exists. Yep. In a different name. And so those issues still are around. And it was a long time ago, because it was in the days when the Black Panther Party was still around and they were one of our partners when we built this clinic in Baltimore. And I was thinking, one of the things that we don't train people for, let's say in Baltimore, would be home health workers, people who are trained as physician's assistants.
It's one of our partners.
To go out to the communities and actually treat people in their homes.
Absolutely.
To take it out there and do those things.
Absolutely.
Which we don't do.
Absolutely. Actually, during our career day, we have two home health care agencies that are coming in, because one of the trends is that we need men to operate lift agencies. As Americans are getting heavier and heavier, guess what? Who's going to move those who are unhealthy or going through terminal illnesses and need to be lifted out of the beds? Well, that particular industry is specifically looking for men. And again, it's a paradigm shift. It's a mindset change. But the opportunities are wide open, and that is truly a path for any young person, especially looking for work. You don't have to be trained. You get on-the-job training. And if you're with a good company, who knows, they may end up helping to pay for your education as well. And so what we want to do with all of our organizations as the OSI fellows is really implore people to look at the situation a little bit differently. Look for solutions and look for opportunities in places you otherwise would not look.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please. Andrew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think a real problem with the way medical care is provided right now is it kind of fosters this sense of passiveness, right? You come in, you're a recipient of medical care, and you don't take a very active role in the medical care that you receive. And we're, you know, trying to fight that with just using our health resource center. And we have, you know, mapped these resources, and our caseworkers help people access these resources. But it's really the people that go out and gain themselves access. And we're trying to use that as a tool to empower people and realize that, you know, that they can – not only can they learn these resources, but they can take that and spread that to their neighbors. And I'd like to definitely give credit here to Mike Rogers, who's one of our volunteers, who's absolutely just been essential in envisioning these things. And they've been – the Men and Family Center with Leon Purnell has been absolutely essential in enacting them. But so a couple of things that we've done to kind of battle this is one, this block-by-block outreach project. So some of our clients who have gained access to medical care and have been satisfied with the service, we kind of invite them to, hey, would you like us to, you know, would you like to take us to your home block? And they'll take us to the home block, and we'll knock on all the doors, and they can help provide that service to their neighbors. And so we've gained very limited funding at this point, but we are looking into the idea of training community health outreach workers. And we've got a couple people who are interested, you know, obviously. It's nothing major at this point, but we've got a little bit of money to reimburse people for their time, and we're looking to just kind of train people just like we would any of our student case managers in taking an active role in, you know, improving their health and improving the health
and
of their
neighbors. And it can be done. I mean, there was an idea here that never got off the ground when I first started the show 18 years ago, where they were actually going to try to take lessons from the People's Republic of China to have barefoot doctor concept, which is regular people being trained in healthcare to send out to the community to bring healthcare to people who don't want to confront the system. So what are your ideas? 410-319-8888. Let's get a couple of people waiting around here. Emily, you're on the air.
Well, good evening, Mr. Steiner, and good evening to your guests. Thank you for always putting such enlightening programming on.
Thank you.
I wanted to make a couple of comments. One was about the farmer's market. I've been going for a very long time, and I used to be able to go down there and just with a little bit of money buy groceries, but now it's so expensive. It's more than the supermarket to buy fresh vegetables. The other comment I wanted to make was about the children. I used to work for Sciences for Everyone with a volunteer job through the churches, you know, and you teach young people about science. And I tell you, just to have some of these programs in the schools, first starting with how the children can connect with the land. And that could be from the kindergarten, growing grasses, to planting the Chesapeake Bay, right up and through into middle school and high school, to let the children plant their own gardens. Even a small, they call it a mini, you can make with a milk crate and a burlap sap and putting the soil in there and see how much that one little square will produce. It's amazing for a family. So there's a lot that can be done. I would also like to say that when I'm listening to your program, I'm in the car. So if you could just put every information on your online.
Oh, we will do that.
That would be wonderful.
Thank you, Emily. We will. That will be at steinershow.org. You have to show all the information about our guests and their work will be online for people to contact them and link to their work. So we try to do that after every show. Maya, I mean, the first thing she was talking about, the both things she was talking about, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the cost of this. Somehow that has to be dealt with.
Absolutely.
So that working class Baltimore, America, can afford good food.
Definitely. Well, and we are seeing a rise in our food prices across the board.
We are.
And some of the cheap food, unfortunately, is sort of artificially cheap thanks to government subsidies. And so we're rarely paying the true cost of our food. But I think there are some really neat programs to address affordability, such as some of the incentive dollar programs. So if you are on government food assistance, there are ways where you can go, for example, to the Waverly Farmers Market or to the Real Food Farm Mobile Farmers Market and get your dollars you spend on your EBT card matched. So that basically gives you a 50% discount on what you're buying. Of course, that doesn't reach everybody. That's just people who are on food stamps. But it's a start, and I think we are seeing more and more efforts to really make these things affordable across the board. And some, you know, some farms where people will come and work and then get some food in exchange for the time they've put in. But it's an incredible problem, not just for people living in food deserts, but the healthy food is really hard to afford.
And I think the idea of getting kids and training them on how to grow their own food in school early and cook.
Absolutely.
Is something people think is not, this is not just home ec, we're talking about survival.
Right, and there's no reason that shouldn't be the program that's accessible to everyone. It shouldn't only be in a couple of charter schools or only in high-income neighborhoods. And I think a lot of community gardens and farms and parks are really sort of mini hubs. They're the hub in the neighborhood that kids do come walking by. I was at White Lock Community Farm just the other day, and the kids after school come over and hang out. They run around on the mulch pile. They get a sense of what's growing. They were just like urging me to try the carrots. They were like, you would not believe how good these carrots are. And it was just like, you know, in contrast to what everyone says about kids and vegetables. But I think having it right in your backyard really changes how you relate to fresh food. And so the more we see that in Baltimore, in neighborhoods, block by block, the more we're going to see people having a new relationship to their food.
Can we go back to the phones real fast here? 410-319-8888. Kalik, you're on the air.
Yes. Earlier, By the way, good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Earlier, you mentioned, you said a question, how can we change? I think that the mindset basically of not making excuses or not participating.
Kaliki, you're going in and out. Could you speak either more, kind of more directly into your phone? It's hard to hear what you're saying.
Oh, okay. I think you asked a question earlier about how can we change things, okay? I'm kind of paraphrasing, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd say that that's a mindset that says change the mindset to not making excuses. You know, make a thing where I'm going to participate. I'm going to find my niche that I can enjoy contributing to the community every day, and find that and do it. Now, I called mainly because there was a mention of farming and urban farming, and I'm highly interested in developing that. So I wanted to get the contact number for that group.
Well, what we can do is, if you'll hold on, the producer will pick up the line, get your phone number and email address, and we'll turn it over to Maya after
great.
The show.
We'll be in touch.
And that'd be great. Yeah, and there's some great people you can work with here in town to learn about that. So
yep,
that's
lots of stuff going on.
A lot of stuff. Thank you so much for your call, Kalik, and thanks for holding on. 410-319-8888. Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi,
how's
Andrea?
Everybody?
Very well. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Well, I was calling. Two quick things. I think as far as in the area of finance, I think if we hold the city a little bit more accountable. So I'm new to the area, so I'm still navigating the kind of the city government of Baltimore. But I see one area where as far as finances, that I think it's totally neglected, which in other parts of the country, code enforcement, because, like, you have some really nice areas in Baltimore, and then you have some areas you're like, really, okay, who owns this, and why does it look like this? And so I'm like, come on, like, where I'm from, our neighbors will call code enforcement at heartbeat, and if they have to come out and cut your grass, that's $400. So that's a little incentive to take care of your property. And I think that would generate a lot of income in and of itself. Now, how the city distributes is another way. But, I mean, that's one way to possibly fund. For example, like when I grew up, we had 4-H. And where I moved from, this last move, there was still 4-H. But where I come from is an agricultural area. It's in the middle part of Washington State, and that area is farm country. And so they still have things like 4-H. They still have agricultural programs where the kids can actually work on the farms during the summer in any capacity that you want. If you want your kids out there picking asparagus and learning how to develop an orchard. But there's just lots of things. But I kind of agree with, like she was saying about the kids and the carrots. And, you know, there's nothing like having fresh vegetables. And coming from Washington State, it's kind of that collectiveness. And that's the second piece that I was going to bring in, is that I think what could help if we could get kind of back. Like when I grew up in the 70s, even though there was racism and you had things going on, there was still a sense of community. So even if the person was like, okay, maybe I don't like black people or maybe I don't like white people, there was still this, you know, it just wasn't out there. It was just,
right.
Maybe they did that at home and it was behind closed doors, but there was still a sense of community. And then when I moved to Washington State to that little bitty area, just because of that reason, I was like, wow, you know, my neighbor was Aryan Nation, but whenever I was out of town, you know, he took care of our house. So even though, you know, that was an odd match, everyone still took care of each other, and the farms were really great, kind of that bringing that collectiveness, because, like, your neighbor might have worked at the onion farm, at the onion plant, or another one might have worked at the potato farm. And so you have everyone bringing food to each other.
Well, Andrew, I'm going to jump because we don't have much time left. I think your idea about kind of getting a cooperative sense in the city is very critical.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Latasha.
And that's where we, all of us, especially as OSI fellows, are at in our visions. we specifically want to raise a level of conscientiousness amongst the people of not only Baltimore, but throughout this country and the world. And the only way we are going to do it is by having the Mark Steiners of the world who give us a platform and building capacity amongst ourselves and our organizations. And one of the things that we're all looking to do is somehow develop a consortium of, like the young man was saying earlier, of ideas so that we can build capacity and stop unnecessarily replicating what already exists. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage you to join us in doing that as well. It can be done. It's taken generations for us to get to this low point. It's going to take us generations to get out of it. But just know that we are definitely on a path to doing just that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that attitude is totally infectious. I mean, you know, coming down to, you know, the neighborhood we work in, sometimes when people really going back to that first point she made with the caller had made kind of taking care of your property and stuff. I think people come to accept a certain level of whatever's going on, and just encouraging people to, you know, put the city to work, like call 311, make sure your neighborhood looks nice, and it's infectious. People start to see it. They start to buy in.
Right.
And one of the beautiful things about living in a smaller city like Baltimore is that you can really build a cooperative spirit. You can get connected to the city officials. You can access the different people who are making change in a way that is harder in, you know, New York or San Francisco. And we can really reach those people and collaborate in a way that would be harder in a bigger city. So that's the strength we have.
I think it is. There's a lot of potential here. And I think that sometimes it has to be from the ground up and people coming together to do things that change the socioeconomic, political nature of the city rather than always
Absolutely.
Kind of worry about who gets elected to office, because it doesn't always make a big difference.
That's right.
Did I say that? I did say that.
Yeah.
I meant that. It was good to have meet the three of you.
Likewise.
Maya Kosick, Andrew Gaddis, Latasha Vanzi. Thank you all for being in the studio. Congratulations on being Open Society Institute Fellows.
Thank you,
Mark.
Thank you.
Very much. It's a pleasure.
And look forward to hearing more about your work as the year goes on. Good to have you all here. Thank you all for calling in today and really kind of bringing your ideas to the airwaves. Sorry we couldn't get to everybody. But it was a great community conversation, and we look forward to having more of those. On the way out of here, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Even if you're a first or second home buyer, you're looking for a home in Baltimore, never a better time. 1-800-638-7781. You would be surprised. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Harrison and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show, podcast any of our past shows, and get information about our guests and the work that they do, go to steinershow.org. It's all on our website right there. Martha Reeves Drews is coming up next. See what she's got in store. I think she's got three very interesting women in store for a conversation coming up the next hour, so stay tuned for her. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.